Welcome, everybody, to another episode of I'm Nano. And today, as part of our Nano Life series, we have a special guest, Dr. Thomas Mortelmans. Welcome, Thomas.
Thank you very much, Monica.
Thank you. And so Dr. Thomas graduated with a PhD degree, summa cum laude, I might add, at the Swiss Nanoscience Institute in 2022. And there he used state-of-the-art nanofabrication techniques to develop a fluidic device for biomarker detection, which has multiple patents on it. And yes, it was used for COVID-19 detection as well. So very, very famous work coming out of the PhD, and numerous best poster, best talks, best image awards at various international conferences. So we have a big shot here, a superstar. We have superstar Dr. Thomas that's going to talk to us about his passion for healthcare, science, and innovation. Is there anything I'm missing, Dr. Thomas?
No, but it does feel special being called Dr. Thomas, actually, because it's, I mean, I left academia quite quickly after I graduated, and I haven't spent that much. I mean, I spent 1 or 2 months after the PhD graduation still in academia. So, yeah, thank you very much, Dr. Monica.
We'll be more comfortable with each other as we drop the titles through the show. But for anyone watching, you know, you have the full title, and we'll drop Tom's contact information in the description. And you know, they can feel free to connect with you if you're open to that.
Yeah, it sounds great.
Perfect. And so I'm wondering, someone with your high prestige, what do you do for your hobbies? What are your interests, and how do you manage your day-to-day with all the amazing science that you have going on?
So hobby-wise, I really, really like road cycling. And this started off a few years ago because I'm originally from Belgium. I did there my studies, like my bachelor's and master's in biomedical sciences with a focus on nanotechnology. And then I really liked this interfacial discipline between chemistry, physics, and biology. And then I moved to Switzerland for a PhD project to actually do that a bit more specifically, to really dive deep into this interface of all the sciences. But Belgium is rather flat. I mean, if you just take out this away the sciences, Belgium is rather flat. And then I'm moving to Switzerland. I was never in the Alps before. It's super hilly. But there's beautiful nature. Beautiful nature, and then I started hiking, exploring the mountains a bit, and for some reason somebody recommended me to buy a road bike and actually ride the Alpine passes. And I thought, okay, hey, why not? And now it's turned into quite a hobby. So this is something I really, really enjoy. And also it helps me to turn to focus my mind a bit more. Like, sometimes work can get rather intense, and just going for a bike ride, it does help.
Oh, interesting. So did you find that the bike rides helped a lot more for the stress of the PhD and all that kind of things? And that's a relatively new hobby. So how did you manage the stress during your master's degree? Like, what was the shift like?
Well, this is a good question. I think during a master's degree was a bit of a different stress, because then it was still a bit, you were still studying, it was still this very hot, there was really a student atmosphere still. I mean, during the PhD, I did it at an institute. So I did it mostly at the Paul Scherrer Institute, which is not necessarily connected to a university. So the student atmosphere was a lot less. So there were a lot less extracurricular activities. And the bike riding, I think it's just, it's just a nice way. You go out there, you feel the wind in your hair a bit. Like I say, there are quite some hills to climb here in Switzerland.
That's true.
I think it's once you realize there's some physical strain on your body, the mental strain of the PhD also gets put into perspective, at least for those 10 minutes you're cycling up this hill.
That's true. Well, I guess the life is hills and valleys. So in the literal sense, you're doing them. And then you're in the mental sense, you're also doing them once you're in that kind of academic atmosphere. Something like that, I would say, it seems like. So how was it combining those interests? Because you mentioned you had the nanotech interests and then those kind of biomarker interests, was it from the get-go? Or so how bioelectronics and nanotechnology, biomedical science, incorporating that with the nanotech. So that's what kind of led you to the Swiss Nanotech Institute to do your doctorate. Can you talk more about your research focus there?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. So for me, it was very important after the master's to, if I was going to do a PhD, to do mm-hmm. a PhD in a field which I was really more like interested in, and not really just there's an opportunity to do a PhD, let's take it and go do it. No, for me, it was very important to really do it at a place with a team and on a project that really, where my heart was in, like that I really could get behind and push it. And one of those key factors for me was this interdisciplinary aspect.
Yeah.
And this was what actually led me to the Swiss Nanoscience Institute, because mm-hmm. the Swiss Nanoscience Institute is set up in a very unique way, is that the University of Basel is actually hands out a thesis or provides a thesis supervisor.
Okay.
But the projects submitted to the Institute to get funding, they always should have an external collaborator from a different field as a thesis supervisor.
Interesting.
So all the projects that get submitted, they're interdisciplinary, either physics, chemistry, physics, biology, chemistry, biology. So there's always some interface going on.
Okay.
And the project on which I applied was to make a nanofluidic device for Parkinson's disease, to really look a bit more into the pathophysiology mm-hmm. of the disease and see if we could even potentially make a point of care diagnostic device for it. And for me, this sounded very cool because you have nanofabrication, you have material science, you've got biomedical sciences as well, you've got biology, you've got a bit everything thrown into a nutshell. And I applied on the project. The application actually wasn't that long. I mean, this was also a motivating factor a bit, let's say, like this, because I think in total it was 4,500 characters.
Wow. The application.
So it's like 300 to 400 words. So it wasn't all that much, or maybe a bit more, but not much. It was like three paragraphs. I think it fit into one A4 page.
That's amazing.
So, yeah.
But like, I guess it's the content that's in it, the quality of it, not the length of the application.
But this made it very difficult because you really had to distill everything to like a couple of sentences.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you have to introduce yourself, your interests, what you did, and why you should get the job, all within maybe an A4 page. So right. You cannot really frame the research you've done, or you cannot really frame your education. But in the end, you still have to do it. You have to frame it within a few sentences.
Yeah. And I guess after that, you have like a good baseline going forward. Like, oh, hey, if I run into someone in an elevator, this is my like 2-minute pitch of myself. So I guess it's kind of that kind of exercise as well. So that, did you think it helped you kind of that way too?
Yeah, a lot actually, because yeah. I mean, it was also nice. I mean, but in the end, if you're motivated to do something, things sort of get rolling organically, or they move organically.
Yes. Yeah.
So
there's that kind of flow and movement. And I'll just add that for Parkinson's disease, it's estimated about almost 9 million individuals suffer globally from Parkinson's. And it's it runs deep to a lot of people, and there are a lot of like individuals and families suffering from this, and it's a very difficult disease. So why were you motivated for that disease in particular? Or was it just there's a global list of diseases, this is one of them? Or was there some personal motivation behind that at all?
Mm-hmm. So the Parkinson's disease was actually already defined prior to me applying for the program. So
Okay.
it was a supervised, the thesis supervisor at the University of Basel. And this is also what made me apply. He
Yeah.
was within his field, very known for this type of research.
I see.
And he submitted a project together with someone that was actually more into nanotechnology, semiconductor research, because he had a novel idea of how to make a device for Parkinson's. I mean, to actually dive
That
into the pathophysiology. And this is what triggered me. And of course, also, like you said, there are many people suffering from the disease. It's a co highly complex disease. And to contribute to the field for me was actually very important. So that's what motivated me to apply to the position.
Okay, perfect. And how did you go from that, I guess your original, I'll say proposal, to pivoting everything and then, getting a nanofluidic device for COVID detection? Because I see you have many articles and lots of news outlets have been promoting you for that. So how did you pivot?
So this pivot actually came out of necessity, unfortunately. So the professor
Exciting.
the professor I joined, whose research group I joined, he left the University of Basel.
Oh.
So we all the resources went with him as well. And the funding was locked to the university. So this meant, okay, we had to find another thesis supervisor. But luckily, the partner that provided all the nanofabrication tools and knowledge, he still was interested in the biomedical application regardless. So this was very good. And at the time when he left, the COVID-19 was coming up a bit, and then we thought, hey, if we're going to pivot, we might pivot to something that's highly relevant right now and see how we can contribute with our know-how in nanofabrication to a device that might actually have a meaningful impact on people's lives in the next few months and years. So yeah, starting from that, we build a device. It's difficult to explain in words, but it's sort of a three-dimensional funnel, but on a nanoscale. So if you can say, if you picture a jar that you would fill with basketballs, okay, maybe a very big jar then. So a
Very
very
big
big
jar.
jar or pot that you would fill with basketballs, tennis balls, and ping pong balls. So you have a mixture of these three different sizes of balls. So what we did is we made a device that if you would pour this mixture of balls into the device, the basketballs will get stuck at one position, the tennis balls will get stuck in another, and the ping pong balls will get stuck a bit further. So it's all with this three-dimensional funnel concept, but then on the nanoscale. And the cool thing was is that we could functionalize these balls to detect specific diseases inside patient blood or specific antibodies inside the blood of patients.
That's an amazing visual. Thank you so much for explaining that very clearly. I think our audience will really be able to visualize nice the big balls, like different sizes. Wow, that's fantastic. And would you say that that was a very like challenging point in the degree, like personally and on the academic side, having to kind of do that pivot in the middle of a pandemic when your supervisor is leaving? Was that how was that stressful? How did you manage that? That's a lot.
No, it was a bit stressful, I have to say, because in the end, you do spend some time setting up the cell protocols for these stem cells. I mean, stem cells are tricky to set up a right protocol for. And things were getting some traction. So there was some critical mass coming to the project, which was nice. But on the other hand, for me, given the circumstances, right, it was also nice to pivot to something that I knew could have an impact on people's lives in the immediate future. So that was a nice feeling as well, and it motivated me even more, I'd say. Yeah.
Okay.
But yeah, at the moment I heard that he would leave and think, and then there was a pandemic and labs would close down, home office would become a thing. Yeah, those things they did put some added pressure on the PhD for sure. But in the end, hey, it's a journey, right? It's a journey, that's the experience. The destination is just the point where you end up at the end. But the journeys are right.
The journey is all right. Perfect. And
Yeah.
can you share were there any other personal challenges that you faced during your time as a grad student, or that was like the main big one?
I'd say that's the main big one. Of course, there are other things like experiments not working, papers, of course, not getting published. This is also something that we really faced, because at the end, doing research, I mean, we started off with COVID research from a group, in a group that actually was doing mostly semiconductor nanofabrication, and we missed out on a biological partner. So that was, well, at the beginning anyway, but we had to optimize quite a lot of things, which took a while. And by the time our paper or research was actually in a nice form or had some nice results, when we tried to submit the paper, the editors of the journals, they all came back to us like, hey, sorry, but we have this amount of COVID papers coming to us every day. We're still a journal about nanofabrication and not about COVID-19. So this is something that we did face as well. I mean, contributing to a field of knowledge for COVID-19 at the time was highly relevant, but we were not the only ones thinking along those lines. So
Of
at the
course,
end,
it makes
it
sense.
was, but I think the reason why the work in the, because in the end, it did get quite a lot of media attention. I mean, the national news came to the lab,
Lots of traction, I see.
the Springer Nature, they have a magazine in Austria where they mentioned it as well for physicians, for doctors. And I think the reason why it got quite some traction is that because of the results we got in the end, is like if you put a droplet of patient blood on the chip, within 20 minutes, you could quantify the antibodies against COVID-19 as well as influenza A at the same time, and also say something about the type of antibodies. So you could say, hey, what's the concentration of short-term antibodies, of long-term antibodies against this type of protein of COVID-19, against the other type of protein of COVID-19? So within this 20 minutes, you actually got a relatively good immunological picture of the patient. And I think this is the reason why, in the end, it still got quite some traction, which was cool.
That's amazing. Basically, it's like what Theranos was trying to do and then failed, kind of in a way, because you really are getting those biomarkers identified within a very short time frame for someone. And there's a variety of them you mentioned, like you can take different strains of COVID. Is the technology being used every day? Is it readily available right now? Can you talk? Are you allowed to say that? I'm not sure.
Yeah, of course, these things. So the technology, in the end, we it's still at the lab. So I after my PhD, there are still some people working on improving the cost effectiveness. But what I think what I've done, for example, during the last year of my PhD, is to collaborate with the Fachhochschule, they call it here in Switzerland, which is a technical university of applied sciences. That have many connections with the industry, and they're quite good in actually bridging the gap between academic projects towards industrial applications. So they know how to make projects or device fabrication more cost effective. And the cool thing was, is that we're able to go, this might get a bit technical, but we were able to use electron beam lithography, so a very a relatively expensive method to pattern devices, to make our initial stamp and to use this stamp as a basis for electroplating in nickel. We actually make a negative copy of original pattern in nickel to make what's called a nickel shim.
Nickel
And
shim.
this for me was super cool, because in the end, in nickel shim, you can use to injection mold into thermoplastic materials like polymers. So in the and this technology, it's used for like toy manufacturing.
Toy
like
manufacturing, the, yes, very widely, readily available.
Exactly. So AirPods from Apple, they're also injection molded, and it's like you say, a readily available method, and we're able to transfer the profile from electron beam lithography to this nickel shim to an injection molded piece with like nanometer precision. So we in the end, we lost in the high profile, we lost around about 100 nanometers. But if you take into consideration that our device goes from 3.5 micrometers to 3,500 nanometers all the way down to 400 nanometers, this 200 nanometers, this fluctuations, it's still quite all right.
Yes,
and we were able to show that this is maintained for moderate production volumes up to 10,000 devices. So this is for us, this was great. So you're able to reduce the cost of this point of care diagnostic device greatly, but at the moment it's still not available on the market. And these are plans that are still going on at the institute. They're trying to build the framework. Build a team of the right people to actually push this a bit further. Because academic research and research is one thing, but in the end, if you want a commercial application, you need a supply chain. You need tools that are accessible to you, which you normally would not have in a research environment. You need a lot of different things as well.
You need many.
These are things that are still being worked on. But the proof of principle is there. The first steps are made, and
Wow, you're like the founder of this technology, and then someone else is kind of taking it over. Are you still involved in the project at all at this point?
So I serve a bit as an external consultant at this point. So. it's still very close to my heart, right? It's something I started, and it's great to see now people continue it. And if there's some know-how transfer that needs to be done, or they require another set of eyes to look at a certain type of experiment, I'm assisting as well.
Okay.
Plus, there are quite some papers or small papers that might still come out from the PhD. So I'm still in contact with my supervisor to get those. Submitted at least at some point.
Yes, I think
for me,
for sure. Go ahead.
No, please.
No, I was like, you know, you go into the PhD thinking, oh yeah, you got to get XYZ papers out before you finish, but most of them come out after the degree is done. It seems right.
Exactly. Exactly. So these things are still things I would like to do in the next couple of months to get these papers submitted and maybe published somewhere. That would be nice. Because in the end, and we also extended this device to quantify some inflammatory molecules that are associated with the initial stages of cancer. And these are things that also are still in the pipeline of getting published. The results are not published yet, but the results are exciting.
That is, it's hard to not get excited about such positive research, and that you did it within the 4-year span of your degree. Amazing. And I'll touch on the fact that also you have an institute that can help commercialize academic research, which is very difficult, as you've said, to kind of go through from one step to the other, because in academic research, you work at such a small scale. So getting to that mass production, multiple steps, which I'm sure took multiple months of trial and error, like the way, you know, you say it casually, but I'm sure it took a lot of R&D to get to that point. I think you're a millionaire in the sense that you've helped a million people, or that your technology is going to help a million people. And if I dare say, you will be a billionaire, Thomas, because you're going to be helping a billion people with this amazing technology of biomarker detection. Would you kind of agree with that? If we change our definition.
I think it's a very nice compliment, but let's see. I mean, there are quite some things still need to be done.
Yes.
But let's hope so. I mean, in the end, if the technology even helps one person, it's of added value. So for me, it's yeah. And actually, this research actually for me, it was amazing to get in touch with physicians in hospitals that were interested in this technology. They were telling about their patients. They were providing input like, "Hey, this would be super cool because we could help our patients more quickly during the early phases of a disease. We could actually act quicker." And this opened my eyes a bit because it was very, very applied. I mean, this is like you feel the impact, and this convinced me to, or triggered me to go from academia to industry, because it's a bit different. Like in industry, I'm only in industry now for 8 months, but it's very value driven.
Value driven, interesting.
It is in the sense that, like, of course, there's a financial incentive. I like to make an impact on people's lives. I like to be in industry or be in a field where it's very applied, where you have a direct connection to some extent with a patient.
Mm-hmm.
Come to learn as well in the last couple of months that the people you surround yourself with, they have a very big influence on your work life, but also your work-life balance, your learning curve, your motivation. Like when I applied for the PhD, it was more like, "Hey, where's your research interest? Like, what experience do you have? Did you do any extra internships to dive deeper into the topic?"
But that's very interesting. And then I really like what you said. You're surrounding yourself by, I guess, people that will bring you up and have. They'll help you meet your potential in life or have high expectations for your life so that you can be motivated to go through things and live to your potential.
Yeah, but I think this is also the case in academia, very much so. I mean, even the project, even if the project is very cool, if the people who are working on the project or the people you're surrounded with, they don't, like, it's a nature-nurture kind of thing. Like, the project can be very nice, but if the group is not... If there's no chemistry or there's no, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You have this gut feeling that, you know, like, hey, this group, this supervisor, this is helping me push my own limits in a positive way.
In a positive way.
This is something,
Yeah. Okay. And so you got that, I guess, both from your degree side and now that you're in the industry side, you're also getting that as well. So you're very much following... drive, or you're following what's this inside you, Dr. Thomas, that's, you know, making you, like, getting you to all these great positions, and how can you advise others to do the same? That's amazing.
Mine sound very cliche, but I always followed my heart.
Okay.
Like it was something that, like, hey, if my passion is there or my interests are really there, it's something that I wanted to do. And I don't know. Like, with the PhD, I knew the eventual application would be very nice. Like, it's a biomedical application, Parkinson's, it can make an impact. But when I joined the nanofabrication group as well, like, the group meetings, for example, they were mostly about semiconductors. They were mostly about core nanofabrication. How can we make these devices for industry, for how can we make smaller nano patterns? Like, what's going on here from a material standpoint of view? But for me, like, if you follow your heart, and even though it wasn't my area of expertise at all, but I knew that the eventual application would be very exciting. And, like, if as long as you follow your heart, you get through bits and pieces which are a bit more challenging.
Yep.
But in the end, if there's no challenge, there is also no growth. So
yes,
there needs to be some challenge for personal development as well.
That's very well said. Yes, thank you. And is that kind of something that made you interested, that motto that you have, interested in the innovation and entrepreneurship, or and I guess also the project that you landed on that kind of led to that in some way? But what was it that made you interested in entrepreneurship and innovation, and that led you through this path?
So this was this actually started already before the PhD.
Okay.
So when I was in my master's, I mean, or at university, I was president of a student fraternity for 2 years.
Oh, congratulations.
thank you, thank you.
That's
It was also
fraternities are great. Like they have a good like camaraderie, and you know, it's just a nice environment for the most part. I guess it depends on the, but I'm guessing it's very good.
I really enjoyed it because you're with like people from your program. You're getting together. There's extracurricular activities, and for me also it was an experience to learn how to lead a team very early on, because I mean it was a team of 20 people. We organized a lot of events, like of course parties, but also company visits. And then you get like, for me that was a first touching point, like, hey, I have to manage a budget, I have to ask for funding, I have to get approval from the city council to do certain things. And that actually combined with the lectures I was having at that time, which were about fermentation of sugars, like to get alcohol.
Okay.
I was like, hey, how can I use this drive together with the scientific knowledge to do maybe something entrepreneurial?
Okay.
And that's what led me to make my own gin during university. Let's try to do something else. And I don't know, I like the concept of taking risks and trying to, like, I think if you're an entrepreneur, like with this gin, for example,
yes,
it's your product, it's the thing you developed, it's the thing that you worked on and worked for. And it's like, it's something else to actually, I don't know, like it's this, I'm not sure how to explain it, but there is this drive if you're an entrepreneur, which is very, very exciting.
There's a hidden drive in each and every entrepreneur. Yeah. And that's why there's certain people that make it in that, because, you know, they keep going and they want something to succeed. So
exactly. That's what I'm trying to say.
I mean, it's hard to explain. Can we buy your gin worldwide, or is it only available in Switzerland or in Belgium?
So this, at the moment, it's only available in Belgium.
Okay.
So we do it through an event management company, because I'm now in Switzerland and I'm not producing it here.
Okay.
So we outsource it to a distillery, and then it's distributed with through an event management company.
Okay, so with any of our listeners in Europe, or specifically in Belgium, they can go try it, or maybe in somewhere in Europe you can try to get your hands on this gin. Wow,
yeah.
Fabulous. And do you still work on that project as well in your limited spare time, or is it more like you just manage from afar?
This is just managing from afar.
Okay.
When I'm back in Belgium, I still try to see sometimes, but this is just for personal interest and from a hobby perspective, to see what we could still do and maybe like make another gin.
Yeah.
But it's not something I'm actively pursuing at the moment. This is still managing from afar, let's say.
Oh, okay. You don't want to have like, oh, this gin made in a clean room, like it has promote nanotechnology and then like it'll make you grow faster, or I don't know, higher concentration of alcohol. You don't want to incorporate some of the nano stuff in there.
Yeah, maybe some core shell nanoparticles for slow release of ethanol over time that you, yeah.
There you go. Combining the two things together. That's great. You kind of brought up, I guess, your undergraduate days, master's days. So looking back, would you still have gone to graduate school, or is there anything that you would have done differently?
I would for sure do it again. I mean, this is, even though I had hardships as well, I mean, difficult things and then some pressure. I think for me, grad school was a very, very positive experience. Because if you're into science, if you take away getting the degree and writing the papers and all that, a grad program allows you to fully develop yourself as a scientist, to really follow your passion and to try things that you're interested in. Like there are restrictions, and of course there are boundaries as to what's possible and feasible. But you're given the opportunity for 4 to 6 years or the depending on the length of the grad program, to follow your interest and passion. And I think that's great, because you learn about yourself, you learn where your boundaries are, you learn how to communicate, you learn a lot of soft skills, you learn how to promote your research, how to get up on a stage at a conference, tell an entire audience what you worked on, like why it's relevant. Like, and these are things that maybe are not as much advertised when people think about doing a PhD, but they're very important for any stage later in your career or in your life. Like, what kind of person am I? Like, where are my limits? Like, if somebody pushes my buttons, how do I react? If they keep pushing my buttons, how will I react then? Like, these are things that are very important to discover about yourself. And I think for me, it was 4 years of passion.
Like, learning about yourself, following your heart, but also, you know, how do you react in the face of adversity? I guess that's a very important aspect of it. And I guess the thing you brought up too is, like, as scientists, you know, we can ask questions and, you know, kind of see what the limits are. And I think fundamentally, all humans are like that. Like, as little kids, we know we test the limits within certain boundaries, and then that stops eventually. So it's like not having that stop, like going back to like the roots of everything and like questioning, why is this way? Oh, this is my hypothesis. Let's go test it out.
Exactly.
Kind of human nature too, just our desire to be curious and see things through. Wow, that's quite an interesting outlook. And so we encourage all the listeners to get in touch with Dr. Thomas. And so, because we're a nanotech podcast, I have one final question to ask you. And that is, what do you see as the future of nanotechnology?
This is a very good question. I think it's very broad as well. I mean, it depends a lot on the field. Yeah. And depends on the application. Maybe nanotechnology will become picotechnology. Like, it might be the next step. It might be go smaller. Yeah. But I think nanotechnology, I think in general, what now, like in the coming years, will have a big influence is the fabrication methods for nano-sized features for quantum computing. Like, I think this will play a big role, because if you're able to get nanofabrication methods upscalable, cost effectively running, you can make quantum computers with many qubits.
Yes.
In a very efficient way. And I think this is where the future in the coming years will head towards too. I mean, this will be a very big topic. And I think what is cool for me, when I first, I think it was like 5-6 years ago, before I studied the master's, nanotechnology was like it was a hype word at that time for me a bit. Like, if like in nanotechnology, like everything was nano at that time. Like, I remember the first lecture of the program responsible for the master's. The first lecture was like 40 minutes, not a joke, 40 minutes of him just showing pictures of companies that had nano in the name, but they were huge devices. And it went on for 40 minutes, and he asked always the same question. Is this nano? No, this is not nano. And then went in the next slide. Is this nano? And then it was like a nano dog collar, which was relatively large. No, it's not nano. But everything at that time, when I studied the master's, they used nano as a hype word. It was a buzzword. It was something that was like, hey, if you have something nano in your company or in your device, you're like, and I think even though the things that were not necessarily always nano, but it made people aware of what nano can bring to the table. Like it made people are like, hey, what is nanotechnology? Why are people using it for marketing?
Yeah.
And then, like, for me, that was the point where for me, it was quite interesting, because you could see nanotechnology was going to be a big thing.
Okay.
And I think it was has a lot of potential in different fields. And I think I'm very excited where it will be added into the future. I mean, I was also at a conference a few years ago, and somebody already claimed that they were doing quantum biology. So let's see. Maybe quantum is now the buzzword, but let's see. It's very, very, very interesting.
Yes, absolutely. Yes. And well, thank you very much for your insight. And I like how you just jumped to the quantum and the qubit stuff, even though you are now a fluidic expert. So it just goes to show the broad range of your intelligence, Thomas, and your knowledge. It's amazing. And I'm so glad we got to pick your brain for the past hour. I know you're a very busy man, doing multiple projects at the same time. So I very appreciated of you being on the show, and I'm sure you've inspired quite a bit of our listeners to follow their hearts and follow what they're passionate about, not necessarily just go for that, you know, title or X degrees, or be in this program just because it's something you have to do. You find success by doing what you are passionate about and how to help others.
No, thank you very much for the kind words, Dr. Monica.
So, thank you very much. And that is all the Nano for today, everyone. Take care and stay curious.